Good afternoon. It's 19 minutes after 5 o'clock, 50 degrees outside, with some light rain, fog, and mist as well. Today is Friday, September 27th, 2013. I'm Ed Ronka with Raven News. Sitka voters next Tuesday will choose between two candidates for one seat on the Sitka School Board. Lon Garrison is a six-year veteran of the board, the current president, and the group's lead legislative strategist. Challenger Stephen Courtwright is in his ninth year as a professional educator and has developed strong views about the interaction of policy and the classroom. The pair answered questions from the public in a live candidate forum earlier this week on Raven Radio. KCAW's Robert Woolsey moderated and filed this report.
When he talks about the race, Lon Garrison makes it plain that now is not the time to bring in a new face to the board.
Public education is under attack. There's a lot of people that are criticizing public education, would like to see some major changes happen with regard to public education. And I think it's really important that we have advocates that stand up for what public education means. And that also means standing up for the public process and understanding what it means to be a good school board member.
Stephen Courtwright says this election is not about replacing anyone, but is instead about bringing in a perspective that is absent from the board.
I come from a position where I believe that education policy needs to have the voice of professional educators involved, and that has been neglected for far too long at all levels.
In some school board races around the country, there are larger principles at stake, like whether to open charter schools or to distribute public education funding to private institutions through a voucher system. Garrison and Courtwright are aligned on the purpose of public education and its value. How you get there in the larger world of legislative politics might be a difference. A listener emailed a question to the forum about how the school board could offset some of the negative pressure on school funding in the legislature. Courtwright thinks that patience may not always be the best approach to politics.
It is tough, and there is a very easy answer. The easy answer is to kick down every door in Juneau until we get what we need. But unfortunately, the road to that answer is not as easy as it needs to be.
Garrison has met face-to-face with legislators who are openly hostile to the idea of public schools. He looks for smaller victories.
I try to really present both what we're doing well and what we need to do and where we need to go and how they can help us. What are the items that they can really work towards providing some solutions for, rather than go in and be argumentative and try to convince them that they're entirely wrong. I want to show them a way where they can be right. They can be a part of the solution.
Questions posed by listeners to the forum came in mostly through social media and email and covered a spectrum of issues like how to better celebrate the achievements of students, the role of the tribe in district affairs, and whether the district should provide internet access for students who don't already have it at home, and how to better fund activities so kids don't have to go door-to-door selling stuff. Some questions were technical, like the one posed by the forum's lone caller.
About adopting the Common Core standards.
The candidates were not far apart here, at least in their initial reactions.
It's an elephant in the room.
Well, it's a real conundrum.
But this issue did create some space between the candidates. Courtwright views the new state standards through the lens of a teacher.
It's going to change the landscape. If I had been asked, I would have said that national standards are a great idea, but I don't know that these ones are because they haven't been tested yet. We're field testing them now as they go live. And you know, we're doing things like taking algebra from high school and putting it in eighth grade. And that might turn out to be a great thing for our country. It might not. And that's what we don't know.
Garrison approached the issue from the perspective of accountability. He said there's about 85% overlap between Common Core and the new Alaska standards. The changes in curriculum, testing, and evaluations will be implemented over the next 2 years.
Is the Department of Education using it as a tool or a bat, so to speak, to get us to do what we want to do? I think at times, yes. And that doesn't feel good. That doesn't give us much local control. And that's a real concern I have about the Common Core.
But neither Garrison or Courtwright talked about standardized tests as the real measure of student achievement. When they talk about who the district serves and what they consider the measure of success to be, some of the candidates' differences in opinion disappear, if not their differences in style. Stephen Courtwright.
I mean, Sitka's a weird little town. I love a weird little town. And weird little towns are really good at standing up against the big guy and saying, hey, you know what? We don't really care. We're happy to be weird and different. And we don't mind being evaluated that way, as long as we know internally that we're doing what we want to be doing.
And Lon Garrison.
I think one of the things you really have to do is you have to communicate the success that the district has and tell our story so that people understand who we are, what we're doing, and the good work that we're doing.
The municipal election is Tuesday, October 1st. The winning school board candidate will serve a 3-year term. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
To hear the entire Sitka School Board Candidate Forum, you can visit our website, kcaw.org. There will be no commercial fishing for red and blue king crab in Southeast again this year. The stocks are still in poor shape, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which announced the closure last week. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Fish and Game assesses the red crab stocks each year. That involves the results of an annual on-the-ground survey, past commercial harvest data, and for the past few years, the results of a cooperative research project involving fishermen and the department. According to the department, the Southeast red king crab stock is at its lowest level in 23 years. Joe Stratman is the lead crab biologist for the region.
Stock health ratings of poor in the majority of the survey areas and well below average ratings in the others. Offered no harvestable surplus towards the minimum threshold and regulation. Therefore, the department recommended that there not be a commercial fishery this season.
The department can only open the season if it estimates an available surplus of at least 200,000 pounds. That's only happened 5 times over the past 13 years. The department estimates the total amount of mature crab in Southeast at 910,000 pounds. 740,000 pounds of those crabs are legal size, which means they would be big enough to keep in a commercial fishery. Stratman says it's not a significant decrease from last season, which was also closed.
There weren't huge changes in the biomass from last year for both legal and mature. So I guess we would call the stocks below average, but stable. Things didn't seem to get a lot worse from last year.
According to Stratman, the department has not seen the recruitment of newly legal-sized crab into the fishery on an annual basis. When it's open, the November red crab season provides an important economic boost for permit holders and their crew, as well as processors and support businesses. Last time there was a season, in 2011, 54 permit holders landed 176,000 pounds. At more than $10 a pound, the crab was worth $1.87 million at the docks.
Well, I wish there was more crab in the water, but I think we all realize it's somewhat depressed right now for some reason. Other than the commercial fishery.
John Barry is a red crab fisherman and co-chair of the Southeast Alaska King and Tanner Crab Task Force. That's a group of industry representatives and state officials who work on research and management issues. In the future, Barry says the fleet would like to see the 200,000-pound threshold lowered or done away with entirely.
Because when there's not a fishery, it's not only an economic loss, but it's also an important loss of data for the predictive results of the model. Even if there's 100,000 pounds instead of the 200,000 pound threshold, it's still $1 million worth of economic value. And we have the data every year.
In the past, the industry has argued that department red crab estimates were too low. Fleet input led to changes in the annual department survey, along with an ongoing collaborative effort to gauge crab numbers with the help of commercial fishermen and a new survey method. The study, which started in 2009, involves catching, marking, and recapturing crab. The work resulted in an adjustment that led to an open fishery in 2011, but even with that adjustment this year and the last, the estimated biomass was still too low for another opening. Still, Barry thanks the department for working with the fleet on the project.
It's done a lot to ease a lot of the strife between management and the fishermen. Like, we're all somewhat on the same page now. That's pretty cool.
The department plans to continue the mark recapture study work. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
A 58-year-old Hoona man mauled by a brown bear Wednesday night was medevaced to Sitka with non-life-threatening injuries. Hoona Police Chief Corey Raleigh says the man was attacked at about 9:45 p.m. as he was walking near downtown. He says the man suffered bites and scratches on his legs and back.
Bites to his lower body and injuries to his back from the claws.
Raleigh declined to identify the man. He says the bear was a sow with a cub, but that the man apparently had not come between them. Coast Guard Search and Rescue Controller Adam DeRocher says their medical staff monitored the case, but a commercial medevac service was scheduled to take the injured man to Sitka for treatment Thursday morning. Raleigh says police searched most of the night for the bear. They were able to locate it in a deep canyon using thermal imaging equipment, but officers were not able to reach the animal, and by morning, it was gone. He says his number one concern right now is for the safety of children walking to and from school.
Absolutely. The initial report we received is that she was trying to drag him off into the hemlock, so that's a concern.
Raleigh says Alaska wildlife troopers are sending resources to Hoonah to help with the search, which continues. Well, as you might know, today is my last day of work at Raven Radio. I am starting a new job in Seattle next week, and so I'm going to break with protocol for just a moment and just say thank you. Thank you for letting me read the news and tell your stories and live here in Sitka. I have learned so much here, not the least of which is what it means to be part of a community. This is an incredible community, this radio station, this city, this Southeast Alaska panhandle, everything. And I'm going to miss it here a lot. Thank you for being part of my life and letting me be part of yours, whether it was as a personal friend or just for 12 minutes or so every day. That's all for Raven News. The Alaska Fisheries Report is next. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. With apologies to my future employer, this is the best radio station in the world.